Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Schmelk and Feagles, the first Monday of the NFL regular season.
Ding, 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 ding.
Giants
ding.
And Cowboys are officially less than a week away. Happy Labor Day. We hope you're having a great Labor Day weekend. And you're not working, but we are here working to
provide you some
entertainment.
We are always working, Schmelk.
Absolutely. And, of course, the Giants are working over the weekend, setting their final 53-man roster and their practice squad. And, Jeff, me and Datino gave our final 53s on Friday. I missed two, and I'm going to give you a chance to guess which two guys I missed on.
Dante Dion.
Yes, I did miss on him, though I did predict that after the 53 was set, they would acquire a defensive back from the outside. So
okay.
I'm not considering that a miss.
So that wasn't one that you were – okay.
No.
Tavares King?
No, I had him on, but
you're
in the right position, though.
Oh, you are. Or Travis Rudolph.
Yes,
okay.
I had Rudolph in over Roger Lewis Jr. So
okay.
I had that one wrong.
That was one. And then the other one on defense?
And then the other one I had
on offense.
Was on the offensive line.
Biz?
Yeah, yeah. I had Biz over Wheeler because I thought they would keep the draft pick. So those are the two I got wrong. So the theme here is that I wasn't really surprised by any of that because those were all, I think, final decisions that I thought would be made one way, but they got made the other. They were very close.
And they're still in the house.
And everyone's still here.
They're still here.
And Biz Novotny and Travis Rudolph is a practice today, which means that he is going to get added to the practice squad as well, along with linebacker Nordley Cappy will round out the 10-man practice squad.
Capitan.
Yes. Along with Jordan Williams, Marquise Bundy, John Jalapio, Curtis Grant, Dante Dion, Tim Scott, and safety Ryan Murphy. So there's your practice squad. The final 53, of course, is on Giants.com. Anything about that final 53 catch you by surprise, Jeff, or especially noteworthy to you?
I think the Dante Dion, I think that was kind of a one that they figured, listen, I mean, the guy is, he can't really play outside, so they needed to go out and maybe find a guy that's, you know, the guy they brought in from Pittsburgh, he's 6 foot tall.
Ross Cockrell, and by the
way,
he was named, I believe, the Steelers' under-the-radar superstar by Pro Football Focus last year, so he played well for them.
And the Steelers go out and get Joe Hayden. So, I mean, you know, there's kind of – so, whatever. I think that was a little bit – I think that the Giants had to figure out what they wanted to do with that position.
I thought they might keep – after they – when they acquired that defensive back, whenever they would, I thought it might be a waiver claim, not a trade necessarily.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought Dion might still squeeze in over Nat Burhey, but decided to keep four safeties instead of six corners.
Right. So, but other than that, I Biz Novotny, I don't know. I mean, he is a draft pick. They traded up to get him. Everybody's probably like, oh, my God. But, you know, he's still here.
Well, remember this, too. And I think when I thought about it again, I should have picked Wheeler. And it was my mistake. I was wrong about it. Wheeler can play left tackle. And how many times have we talked about what their backup left tackle plan is? And you don't want to have to move Pugh, then move somebody else, and it becomes a big mess. By having Wheeler on the roster, you have a backup left tackle then on the 53. So that did make sense.
And a backup. We're not talking about a guy coming in there that's going to be a starter. He's a backup to get you through a game. What happens if something, you know, happens to Flowers and he has to come out a few series or even the rest of the game? You now have a backup left tackle. Overall, I think the Giants, and I said it last week, is that, you know, going into that New England game, pretty much 98% of the roster was pretty much set. There was a couple other things there. I think Matt Lacoste made a huge push in that New England game, then turned some heads. I mean, I think a lot of guys had him making the team. A lot of guys didn't have him making the team. He certainly pushed in the right direction there. So it was a good game for him.
And, you know, we talked about them keeping four combined fullbacks and tight ends. Well, they stretched it out to five. They kept Jarrell Adams and Matt Lacoste. Will Ty getting claimed on waivers by the Jets after he was waived. Shane Smith, of course, the fullback in that group. So that group will now be a big part of this offense, along with, of course, Evan Engram and Red Ellison.
And I'm trying to look at game day now. You know, you got the guys are going to be inactive. Which of those guys, you know, it's just going to depend.
It'll be
right?
Either be Lacoste or Adams. Depending.
No question.
And, you know,
yeah.
You should talk to Tom Quinn about which guy's better on special teams and come back with some good BBK inside info.
Okay. I will do that.
Because I'm sure that's going to be the deciding factor,
question.
Yeah.
No question. And again, it probably goes down to matchups during the week. You know, what position that guy plays on special teams, matching up against the opponents, which is a better fit for either one of them. I think that they're both probably, you know, pretty comparable on special teams, and it's just a matter of personnel, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. If you want to give us a call,
don't you think? I mean, I think that Matt Lacoste's play. I mean, this is what we talked about. What are you getting out of this last preseason game? It's those bubble players trying to make plays and make the team. There's a prime example of a guy going into a game who was kind of on the bubble and came out of it as looking amazing.
And by the way, thanks to his connections with Geno Smith, who also earned his way onto the roster, won the backup quarterback competition. Outplayed, I would say, Josh Johnson for the most part in the preseason games. The offense moved better up and down the field. Though Josh Johnson had his best game in the fourth preseason game as well, he also did well.
Yeah, and it's just, I think it just becomes more of who has an upside at the position.
Yeah, he's younger, and he probably has overall more arm talent, I would say, right?
Well, he threw the ball well.
Yeah.
I mean, he really did against that New England. He made some nice throws. And really, what are you going to ask of the backup quarterback to Eli Manning? Just to come in and finish the game. He's got experience. He's got arm strength. And if they're down, they need to get him down the field. He proved that he can move the ball against the Patriots, which was something they wanted to see. They wanted to see if he could get through a game without turning it over. He did. Then he's got the job.
And by the way, I will say this as well, in terms of Geno Smith. The thing that impressed me the most about that game with Geno, and you're going to laugh, it was the sack he took.
Oh,
he was in the red zone,
decision-making.
He dropped back, and he looks, and nothing's there. And instead of trying to squeeze a ball into a small spot,
progression,
he decided to tuck it and try to run, and he still lost a couple yards. He got sacked. That's fine, but they still got points out of the drive.
Exactly.
And I think that was an important step for him that, you know what, it's okay to take a sack.
Right.
It's not okay to throw an interception.
No, never okay to throw an interception.
Right.
Unless it's, you know, at the end of the game and you're chucking it down there.
Right.
Interception happens. But that is maybe a little bit of his maturity that they want to see. And I thought it was, you're right. Don't take him out of scoring position. Now, it's not okay to take a sack, I guess, if it's going to take you out of field goal range.
Of course.
But, you know, those are scenarios that we can go over. But in that scenario, he did the right thing.
Right. By the way, folks, we are going to have a guest on at 12:30. Sam Monson, our good buddy from Pro Football Focus, will join us. And we'll also have a giveaway. Sam is giving away 5 free promo codes that will get you free access to Pro Football Focus's PFF Edge subscription, which gives you player grades, a draft guide, fantasy projections. So make sure you tune in at 12:30 for that. So at 12:30, when we do the interview, I'm going to clear the other lines. We're going to do the interview. Then in the middle of the interview, I'm going to cue you guys to call up the first 5 callers. We'll get to ask them a question, and you will also have a chance, if you're one of the first 5 callers, to be given one of these promo codes. Dave will give it to you, and that'll give you free access to this Pro Football Focus subscription for the 2017 season.
We're givers.
We're givers on
this program now.
Thank you to Pro Football Focus, not to us.
Absolutely.
Sam pulled up. He had the idea. He wanted to do it.
I love it.
We've been we've been working with them for a long time, so we're happy to do it and make everybody happy. Now, I don't want to do too much on the Cowboys here because I want to make sure we get a good 20 minutes of your calls in before we do the guest. We don't know about Ezekiel Elliott yet, so it's hard to really break down this game until you know whether or not he's going to play.
Right?
Well, that's the day, right? If we don't hear anything by tomorrow, that means he's playing.
Okay.
Because if the suspension comes in after 4 o'clock, it's not going to kick into the next week. But odds are, to be quite honest, that no matter what the suspension is, unless maybe it's 1 game, it looks like they're going to file an injunction in court. We'll see if that does, in fact, delay the suspension or not. The Tom Brady precedent, quite frankly, might be a precedent, so the civil court does not actually file an injunction because of what happened with the Brady Deflategate thing. So who knows? That's why I don't want to get into it too deep, because we just don't know yet whether or not he's going to play. But it's a game that the Giants, I think, match up real well with the Cowboys. It's the reason that they beat them twice last year. But it's still a division game. It's not going to be easy.
No, they never are.
No. Not against the Cowboys. Those games are always wet, wild, and crazy.
And if it's – I have a feeling that – well, the both games last year were not shootouts.
Nope.
They were not shootouts.
And the funny – and the reason why – we know about the Giants defense, why it's so good. The Cowboys defense actually was – numbers-wise, a lot better than how they're considered by people in terms of talent on paper. Now, they've turned over a lot. Who knows how they're going to play this year?
Yeah.
The secondary is almost completely different. Only Byron Jones and Orlando Scandrick remain. You have Nolan Carroll. You have Jeff Heath. You got all the guys they drafted who haven't played a lot in the preseason because they've been banged up. But the Cowboys, since that Odell Beckham Jr. catch game in his rookie year, have basically shut down Odell Beckham Jr.
Well, that's been
their
game plan.
He's done virtually nothing against them. So the question is, and the Cowboys had the top-rated rush defense in the league last year, can the other Giants players, the Evan Ingrams, the Brandon Marshalls, the Sterling Shepherds, make the Cowboys pay for taking Odell Beckham Jr. Out of the game as much as they have the last few times they've played?
And can this Giants offense run the football? Shown a little promise the last 2 weeks.
Correct.
Because, you know, when you got a defense like the Giants have, You would love to eat up some clock by running the football. I think that they try to do that against that Dallas defense. However, you hit it. I mean, Nolan Carroll, the only – and, I mean, he comes over from Philly. He's a veteran on that secondary.
And Skandrick.
I think that, you know, you could have a little – I think you could expose them a little bit in the passing game if you can get some protection for Eli.
Yeah, you should be able to. I imagine the Cowboys in that game are probably going to play a lot of zone. You're probably not going to see a lot of man-to-man going up against this Giants corners. If I were the Cowboys defensive corner, I wouldn't do it. Rod Marinelli has played more man the last couple of years, but traditionally, Tampa 2, he's been a zone guy for the most part. So we'll see how the Cowboys handle that.
Well, and it kind of brings up the conversation we had going into the season when they brought in Brandon Marshall.
Yeah.
And Red Ellison now. And Ingram, this is going to take a little pressure off of Odell Beckham in a sense that we got other targets that these guys can go to. So it'll be interesting to see how they play Odell this game.
And I forget who made the point in the spring. I'm not sure if it was Ben McAdoo or if it was someone made the point of the impact of Brandon Marshall. You can't now double Odell Beckham Jr. on one side or, you know, have a corner and a safety over the top.
You can, but you don't want to.
But you can't zone up the other side. Because yeah, if you zone up the other side, open. Brandon Marshall's going to kill you. Because he's so big, he's going to find the holes in the zone. He's too savvy of a wide receiver not to do that.
And he'll make plays on those little quick slants.
Absolutely. No question about it. So it's going to be very hard to do that, which is kind of what Dallas did against Odell Beckham Jr. for a good portion of last season.
Yeah,
so
and, you know, we always forget. I just think that, like, Sterling Shepard is a guy we don't mention a lot.
Yes.
Just because, right? I see big things out of him this year. I really do. I think that he can have a monster season with Brandon Marshall and Ingram and Odell.
But the beauty is they're going to be spread out. And I don't know if anybody's going to have huge numbers because there's so many guys.
Yeah.
But
you know what's going to be nice to see?
It's efficiency. That's what I'm looking for.
What's going to be nice to see is because we know how the preseason goes. You're not tipping your hat to anything in the preseason. Now we're going to get into a regular season game and now we're going to see where this offense has changed from 2016 to 2017 in their personnel groups and get out of that 11 personnel. They're going to be in 11 personnel pretty much, I don't know, what would you think? I'm going to guess 65% of the time this year. That's just their go-to, you know, personnel grouping.
I
11.
Think that's fair.
You know what I'm saying?
I think that's a pretty good number. I haven't thought about it, but I think that's a good number.
Because you got to go from 93 to what? They were 93% in that personnel last year. They have a fullback now. So that's going to get them out of that.
Multiple tight ends that
multiple
can play.
Multiple tight ends. So it could go even, I think, 60 over under 65% of it maybe. Who knows? But it'll be nice to see how Ben McAdoo puts his thinking cap on and says, okay, this is we're gonna change it up.
Right.
And we are going to go for mismatches, personnel, and matchups. Let's get a mismatch here, a mismatch there. Is it Ingram? Is it Marshall? Who is it? And work with it.
And so, one other item, too, to note that people don't talk about because he's not a big-name player, but the Cowboys did lose their starting middle linebacker, Anthony Hitchens, to a knee injury. So he's not going to play in this game, which means it's possible that Jalen Smith actually might start a middle linebacker and play on running downs. He did play in the preseason.
Well,
they're trying to limit his snaps. So I think imagine they'll probably hold him to only first and second down duty,
sure.
And then they'll have Justin Durant, the veteran, come
he's
in
a pretty
in
good
nickel
player.
Situations.
Pretty
well,
good player.
We'll see how much he has left in the tank
and
now.
And those linebackers for the Cowboys, they're always speedy guys.
Oh, and Sean Lee, by the way, is pretty good, too.
Yeah. I mean, he is really good.
And, of course, you have the Cowboys offense, which is their real weapon, and the Giants defense handled them real well last year. We'll see if they can handle them again this year. Jenkins on Bryant, things like that.
Throwing out over-under. So, Sean Lee, I mean, the guy usually has double-digit tackles against the Giants every single time they play him. I mean, it's just ridiculous how that guy is all over the field against the Giants. I mean, I have 12, 13 tackles easily for this guy. He's so much fun to watch.
He's smart. He's always in the right place at the right time.
Oh, my
goodness.
He's so athletic. You never hear anything about him. You know, like he's not in the media. He's not a guy that, you know, yaps all the time. So it's really nice.
All right, so here we go, folks. It's 12:15. I'm going to do these four calls I have on the line. I'm going to do you all in 15 minutes. So if I rush you a little bit, I apologize. Then we have Sam at 12:30, and I'm going to clear the lines. So let's do the four calls we have right now, and let's get to it. Let's go to Bash in Ohio. He leads us off. Hi, Bash. How are you?
Morning, Bash, or afternoon.
How are you doing, John? What's going on, Jack?
Doing great, Bash. What's up?
A little bit as far as 53-man roster. I agree with both of y'all said as far as the surprise to me with Dante Dion. I make that 53 over that far. Hey, with us on his phone and says we go with four receivers, well, four corners with Michael Hunter, the concussion protocol. So that was a question as far as that. And everything else I agree with. And I also wanted to get a quick question as far as the Chad Willer and Vince, the widening pick, as far as I know, Chad Willer, I seen like a scouting report go for him as far as this weekend. I mean, over the week there, as far as the draft, why wasn't he drafted? As far as the scouting, he didn't have a scouting report as far as his thing, as far as Chad, whether or not being drafted over this, or why they are, as far as him not being drafted, period, as far as Chad.
You know, that's a good question. I never really was able to lock down why Wheeler didn't get picked higher, to be quite honest with you, because he was projected to be a mid-round, early day three pick. Bash, I will see what I can look into and see exactly why he went he didn't go earlier. I feel like I might have read something about that a few months ago, but I don't remember it, so I will check on that for you, all right?
Yeah, I don't know. It's you know, these guys get all these grades, and they're, you know, they come out of college, and they're, you know, they go through all these combine stuff, and there's, you know, there's something there. There's something there. Whether it was his size, he's not a very big guy. Footwork, I don't know. But there obviously was something there that a lot of the scouts didn't like, and unfortunately he didn't get drafted. But you know what? Not everybody gets drafted. And, guys, sometimes when you don't, you make a team. There it is. He's on the 53-man roster.
One more quick question. I'll take it offline as far as the least in the waiver of a lot of right backs. Do you see the Giants picking up any power back? Are they going to keep the 40 they have? And I take that off as far as Jonathan Williams is an player I'm thinking of, but you see them picking up any running backs off waiver, keep the four we have.
No, they're going to keep the four they have. Listen, we don't know for sure, but I'll tell you right now, this first week of the NFL football season, even going into the second week, this is very fluid. I mean, things change all the time, not only for the Giants, but for every team. They're still looking for guys. There's guys that are, you know, that 48 to 47th roster spot all the way down. Those guys are never safe at this point in time. They really aren't. And especially if you're a young guy where you don't have to guarantee anybody's salaries and things like that. So it's very fluid up until the first couple weeks of the season. But I think they're pretty set on those four guys.
Thank you, Bash. Appreciate the call, my friend. And I forgot, Wheeler did have a couple off-the-field things, and he had some injury issues, too.
Oh, did he?
Concussion stuff. He had an ACL in 2014.
Well, there you have it.
So those are some of the reasons why he dropped in the draft. And I do remember that now. I had to look it up and remind myself. And actually, Dane Brugler did have him ranked above Biznavati by two spots on his offensive tackle rankings. And Dane, of course, is one of our common contributors during the draft season. Does a great job. Let's go to Dirt in Tinton Falls. Dirt, he's on line four. What's going on, buddy? How are you?
Okay. Real quick question for you on the roster.
Sure.
Since Hertzlick got put on IR, if Diasi gets hurt in a game, who's the backup snapper?
You know, Jordan Williams, actually, I saw working a lot pregame during the season, doing long snapping. And I think I remember seeing Hertzlick do long snapping in years past, too, as the backup.
No, he was the backup.
So that is a really good question. Jeff, do you know who the backup long snapper is right now?
I think it's who you mentioned.
No, but he's on that. He's on the practice squad. He's on the active roster. So if Diasi gets rolled on a special teams play,
I will
who do
find
you
that
think
out.
The long snapper
I will
is?
Find that
All right,
out.
So that is two things Jeff's going to find out for us.
I will
us.
Find that out.
And we will have that for you when Jeff's on the show next week. All right, Dirt?
Thanks.
You're welcome.
You got anything else for us?
That's it.
Oh, all right, thank
you, I appreciate
you,
it. That's a very good question because those were the two guys.
I couldn't even begin to guess.
No, because those are the two guys that I had seen do it. Hey, Dave, you have no idea who the backup long snapper would be, right? It could be Brett Jones. Obviously, the center is always the guy you would think about.
Yeah, exactly. He's between his legs all the time.
Again, I remember seeing Jordan Williams doing it pregame during the preseason, and Hertzlick had done it in the past, but I don't know who it would be. It's a good question. Good question, Dirt. I like to get stumped on these. See, that's why the callers to BBK are the best.
And I don't think that's one. I will find that out. I will find that out. What was the other one I needed to find out?
Lacoste versus Adams, special teams.
Oh, special teams. All right, I got that. Put in the memory.
Coverage slash blocking. Imagine Adams is probably the better return blocker.
A little more speed.
And generally the more physically gifted player generally will be better on specials because it's running, size, hitting, and things like that.
Yep.
That's why you was, you know, such a good
of
special
course.
Teams player.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was your physical gifts.
Physical, fast, smart, you name it.
Size, speed, weight. Oh. That was Jeff Eagles.
So are we taking this next caller now?
Yes, we
because
are.
Because this is what I've been waiting for.
Have you? Oh, yeah. I'm sure you have been waiting for this.
We have it up on here, roster. I wonder which roster he's talking about.
You know what? I just thought of it right now. I should have brought in a bib for you today.
I
with
was
the
thinking
big
about it.
Old lobster on it.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Hallelujah.
Man, am losing I hungry? His mind.
Mr. Illness.
He wasn't right in the hat.
Enough jokes.
I am happy.
You're a madman.
And here we go.
You know, some Maine lobster sounds just delicious on this Labor Day
Chuckles.
Monday.
How are you, my friend?
It sounds good. How are you, Charlie? And he wasn't even cut on Saturday. He was like the first guy out the door on Friday morning. Charlie, come on.
Yeah, but it wasn't official until actually 4 p.m. on Saturday. So I waited till then.
12:21.
So, Charlie, here's what you got to do. You got to reach out to Feegs on Twitter. He'll follow you, and then you can direct message the information for how to get the lobsters down here. And we are excited for lobster.
Yeah, I'm sharing it with my guys. So make sure there's enough for all of us.
And by the way, Charlie, make sure you send one extra small one for Lance, okay?
That's right.
Hey, Jeff, I'm going to get you the best lobsters. They're called pier lobsters.
Pier? Okay.
Pier. You like to pier on a dock. Pier lobsters.
All right.
The reason they're called pier lobsters is because when they pull up a dead body off the pier, there's always six or seven lobsters hanging on them. So those are the ones I'm going to send you.
Oh, please don't send me the pier lobster. That's really gross, by the way.
I know. I'm just kidding. No, we'll get it together. So, but I got a question for you. I mean, of course the backup long snapper. It's got to be a center. What are we going to do? Have a D tackle doing it?
No,
center should be able to do it.
No, you are so wrong. I can tell you before the modern age of snappers that are only on the roster to snap, tight ends were the snapper. I had guys that were tight ends that snapped to me. Legitimately.
So you're telling me Richburg have to be a center. And Jones can't long snap?
It's not as easy as you think. Just because they look between their legs doesn't mean they can throw the ball.
Well, you would think,
but it's not that way, Charlie. It's not that way.
All right.
Well, hey, listen, I'll give you a prime example. Let me give you a prime example real quickly, okay? Super Bowl year in 07, the defensive tackle was our snapper for short field goals.
Who was?
Alfred.
Jay Alfred.
That's right. And by the way, Charlie, remember this too.
There you go.
Remember when the Giants played the Pittsburgh Steelers in 2007 on the way to the Super Bowl and their long snapper got hurt? Who was the backup long snapper that flung the ball over the Steelers punter's head that turned into a safety? James Harrison. James Harrison was the backup long snapper.
Yeah, there you go.
That's why they should have used the friggin' center.
And by the way, Zach Diossi was a linebacker. He's not an offensive lineman either.
Exactly.
I know. Hey, look, I think we were supposed to be bringing in Steeny, the linebacker that played for the Pats, who was really pretty good. He's supposed to be coming in like either today or tomorrow. So don't be surprised if Munson is waived and we pick him up to back up Goodson, because I think that might happen.
We'll see.
Just reported here on Big Blue Kickoff Live.
By Charlie.
Our main scout up there.
That is correct.
Yes.
And then we'll put him on the practice squad, and Cappy's going to have a cup of coffee, and he'll be gone. So, anyway. Hey, Jeff, I'll be tweeting you. So.
All right, Charlie. I cannot wait. Thank you so much.
And
it
Charlie,
was the easiest bet I ever made in my life.
And Charlie, you are a good sport. We appreciate
it. Yes,
you are. And, of course, it's always in good fun. We love you calling in, all right?
Thank you, Charlie.
All right, man.
Have a
good
one.
Thanks, buddy. The best thing about the bet for me is in you getting the lobsters. We don't have to see him in person on a game day around
no
the
question.
Stadium.
Yeah. And we'll pick a date, and I will let everybody know when it's coming, and we may have it right here on set. What do you think? Maybe, you know, at least we won't be eating it. We'll at least show you that it has arrived, right?
I imagine Paul and Lance would be uncomfortable around like the live lobsters. You know what I mean?
Figures.
It's just a guess. I don't know if that's true or not.
Especially a pier lobster. Good point.
Doesn't sound like a pure lobster. It sounds like an East River lobster to me.
Sounds like a gross lobster. Something out of the Passaic River, exactly. Right? Whoa.
Six eyes and like eight claws, right?
Nine claws on it.
Let's go to Ken in New Jersey. He'll be our final call before we get Sam from Pro Football Focus. How are you, Ken?
How you guys doing? How's your Labor Day going?
Well, we're here, but otherwise it's great.
Yeah.
Sorry, you have to work.
I'm actually shocked.
I've been listening for years. That's the first phone call I ever heard from Charlie that he didn't mention an offensive lineman.
No question.
He didn't mention the words offensive line. He didn't mention Eric Flowers. He didn't mention anyone on the street that could come in and play on the offensive line.
I'm shocked.
I'm shocked. Well, now I'm going to mention it.
That's okay.
All right, go ahead.
I'm really happy about Chad Wheeler getting the job here to back up Eric Flowers. I think that's not only going to be good to back him up, but it's going to push him throughout the year. Like these past couple of years, he hasn't had anybody actually pushing him throughout the year. Once he gets the job, it's his. And also, I want to get Giants fans really excited, and then I'll let you guys go.
Sure.
Everything Odell Beckham Jr. has done up to this point has been in double coverage. That cannot happen. Well, it can happen, but it's probably not going to happen very often this year. So get excited. Let's go Giants. Thanks, guys.
Hey, appreciate it. And you're right. Look, Odell's going to have much less attention. He played with Victor Cruz at full strength for 6 quarters before Victor hurt himself.
Right.
Hakeem Nicks was never the dominant receiver he was with Odell Beckham Jr.
No.
Sterling Shepard was great last year, but he was a slot receiver. It's a little bit different. And he was a rookie. He's going to be a better player this year. But to have Shepard and Ingram and Marshall and Beckham, it will be a very different experience, I think.
Which is what I'm excited about.
Odell Beckham.
Like I said, I'm so excited just to see this offense come out and reveal a little bit what we haven't seen all preseason.
Right. And we'll be joined by Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus in a second. And again, we'll have a giveaway once he's on. The first 5 callers, when I announce it, not before. We will not be taking any early calls, folks. And I have a method to figure out if you called in early. We'll get you.
the police.
Exactly.
The radio police.
No,
here.
They just won't win. That's
well,
how it
that's,
goes.
That's, yeah, so don't cheat.
Exactly. So I'll announce that once we get Sam on, when you can call in to try to win the contest. You'll ask Sam a question, and you'll get a free code so you can get their PFF Edge product for free this year with player grades, draft guide, fantasy projections, etc. And we'll give away 5 of those when we get Sam on at 12:30. We'll have him on for about a half an hour talking Giants football. Some news from practice today. I should note Ben McAdoo, I think, will be addressing the media in a few minutes. So we'll keep our eyes on Twitter. We'll see what some of the reporters report about that. Then the locker room is open as well. Unfortunately, they schedule it at the same time of the show. So we'll try to see what people are saying about it, and we'll have it for you on Giants.com. And Dave, that'll be on Twitter, the Giants Twitter feed, the McAdoo presser. Is that correct? Okay, it'll be up there right now. So you can go check that out if you want. Some word from practice, according to the Giant writers that were out there. Neither Beckham nor Keenan Robinson practicing, both of them on the side. Robinson with the trainer. The fact that he's outside, though, in the concussion protocol means that he's
good.
Further along. That's a good sign. I saw a video on the internet of Odell Beckham Jr. on a bicycle. So he's out there. He's doing something. He wasn't out there the last couple of weeks, which is good. Eli Apple, Jay Bromley, Tavares King, all participating to some degree. Again, that according to media reports who are out there watching practice. So it looks like they are slowly coming along. A very short workout today. Practice was only a little bit over an hour long or so. So just a couple notes out there from the practice field today.
Yeah, and then I'm guessing, I don't know this for sure, that they'll have a normal work week tomorrow off for the players, I would imagine.
Yep,
and then right into Wednesday, game plans, and ready to go.
And remember, that is not a normal work week, Jeff, because the team from here on out will be off on Monday, and then they start Tuesday
that's
and
correct.
They go forward
I keep
with
them
the new
going
schedule.
Back old school. That's right. They're off on Mondays.
But again, because of the Labor Day weekend, they had a couple of the weekend days off without the game. They figure work a Monday, off Tuesday, then you get to work for the
that's
Sunday
right.
night
That's right. I
game.
Forgot. McAdoo did that last year, right? That was the changeup.
That's correct.
Worked pretty good. They were running 11 games doing it. So.
Exactly. No question about it. Well, again, we'll have Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus in just a second. And again, we'll have a giveaway with Sam. I'll give you the heads up when to call in, and we will give away 5 free promo codes that you'll enter into the little promo box when you sign up and subscribe, and that'll give you your PFF Edge product for free. And also, if anybody's out there, you don't want one of the 5 codes, if you put the PFF 10 into the promo code, that'll get you a 25% discount as well.
There you go.
So
PFF10.
Whoever you might be, you have a way to win or save right here on Giants.com. And, Jeff, it's always fun to get the take of the guys over at Pro Football Focus. You know how they do their method, so I'm not going to have Sam explain it. I'll explain it myself. They have multiple people watch the games. They grade the players as best they can off of what they see. The grades go up. They do snap counts. They do all that stuff. They have signature stats like time in the pocket, time from snap to release, all that stuff. And, again, you can get that with the PFF Edge product, which you will be able to win sometime in the next half an hour. Just make sure you stay tuned and listen. And again, the first 5 callers will have a chance to ask them a question. They'll also get one of these 5 codes to win a free PFF Edge subscription. And joining us right now on the phone is, in fact, our good buddy Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus, joining us from across the sea.
Hello,
Sam, how
Sam.
Are you, buddy?
I'm good, but I'm not across the sea anymore. I'm American.
Oh,
oh you are. Well, okay, that's even better.
You finally made it over. I know it was a long product, Sam. Where are you at now? Where are you living?
I am PFF HQ, Cincinnati, Ohio.
Very good. Wow. Congratulations, and welcome to the beautiful United States of America.
Perfect.
All right.
Thank you.
Let's get to it here, Sam, and let's talk big picture first with the Giants. And I know all the questions everyone has about the Giants' offensive line. You know what they did last year. The guys, for the most part, are the same except for the addition of DJ Fluker. Did you see progress from this Giants' offensive line from what you guys are able to grade and see during the preseason?
I think there's a little bit of progress. It's still a concern, obviously. It's the single biggest problem with the team last year. It's probably going to be the biggest issue with the team this year, but they graded well in preseason. Even Eric Flowers didn't grade badly. I know a lot of people were kind of trying to pin some sacks on him that weren't necessarily his fault, ones where quarterbacks got flushed to him and that kind of thing. So I think he actually played okay in preseason, but the concern is, I think the same thing was true last year. He started off the season well. It just didn't last more than a week or two, and then suddenly the wheels fell off again.
Interesting. And I think, aside from the tackles, I have one more follow-up on the offensive line, Sam, running the football. I know you guys are big fans of Paul Perkins. I am too. We saw one running in the preseason against the Jets where he made a very talented young safety, Marcus May, basically fall in the wrong direction with one of those moves in the middle of the field. What do you think the issue is with this running game? Is it more on the running backs, or is it just too much penetration in the middle of that offensive line?
I think the entire thing has been a problem, whether it's the running backs, whether it's the line, whether it's blocking, you know, from tight ends and backs, which often gets overlooked. That can be a big issue for your running game if those guys aren't able to execute blocks. I think for the Giants collectively, it's been the whole thing that's been an issue for them. Including Paul Perkins, who, like you said, we were a big fan of coming out in terms of being able to make guys miss tackles, being able to gain yardage despite not ideal blocking. I don't think Perkins has really lived up to the hype yet. And this preseason really didn't get enough playing time, I guess, to really show that there's anything different about that. But he has huge talent, and if that line can start blocking a little bit better, if they can get blocking a little bit better on the perimeter with tight ends, then there is the ability to run the ball better.
Well, you know, one thing they did have on the 53-man roster now that they didn't have last year is a fullback. So that's going to help the offense. They've got Rhett Ellison, who came over from Minnesota, who's known for being a good blocker. So both of those two additions on offense certainly should help the running game for the Giants, so hopefully they can grade as a whole a little bit better than they did last year. And then, of course, you got Paul Perkins, who, you know, he does have a lot of talent. We're looking forward to having him step up in his second year as being a starter. So a lot of good things pointing in that direction. I'm sure that we will get all the great stats that you guys put out on that offensive line this year sooner than later.
Yeah, absolutely. Rhett Ellison is an interesting player because I think he's a better fullback than he is a tight end, certainly with us. His grading was always the highest, but the more he played in the backfield, and then when he was sort of transitioned away and put as a tight end, he struggled a little bit more. But he certainly has the ability to really help the run game if he plays well.
How much do you think Odell Beckham, when he gets back and he's healthy, he was on a bike today at practice, how much is he going to be impacted, do you think, by the presence of Evan Engram, by the presence of Brandon Marshall, two weapons that the Giants simply didn't have anything close to in the last couple of seasons on the other side of the field?
It's got a huge potential to help him. Last season, he was doing so much by himself. He broke 29 tackles, which was the most of any wide receiver in the NFL by a good distance. I think there are only four guys, including him, that broke more than 20 tackles over the course of the year. So it was Odell Beckham doing a huge amount of work by himself after the catch, as well as making spectacular catches and doing the stuff deeper down the field. So anytime you have more than one weapon, guys like Brandon Marshall and guys like Evan Engram, it just takes some pressure away from a number one receiver. It limits what you can do on defense in terms of cheating your coverages towards one guy because you have to play the rest of that offense honest now in a way you didn't necessarily need to.
What about in that – you also – again, we keep not mentioning Sterling Shepard in this equation, if you will, because you got all those other targets that we just mentioned. What type of a year are you looking for Sterling Shepard to have in his second season?
Yeah, he could be helped out hugely by all these other weapons coming in, especially because by the way that the Giants have been deploying Evan Engram, he's not going to steal those slot targets from Sterling Shepard, which I think would have been a fear when they drafted him, given how Engram had been used in college. Engram has been really deployed as just a conventional inline tight end so far in preseason. 65% of his snaps have been as an inline tight end, just 9 snaps split out in the slot, which I think almost the reverse of the way you would have expected it, given how he was deployed in college. So Sterling Shepard should be that guy that can own the slot targets and really have a big season. He's definitely got the talent to do it. He got a decent amount of targets last year. I think he should see that number go up this year because of those extra weapons taking the attention away.
One of our callers earlier, Sam, wanted me to ask you a question, and he noted how you guys generally don't rate Eli Manning very highly when you do your quarterback rankings. He was just curious as to why, generally, you guys don't look very favorably on Eli.
Well, I think it's a case of what year. You know, in 2011, Eli Manning was one of the greatest performances for a quarterback we've seen when grading. The sheer distance that he was able to go performing under that much pressure that season and ultimately leading him all the way to a Super Bowl was phenomenal. Over the years, though, his grade over the last couple of seasons has just been declining a little bit. I think if you look at the way that offense is set up, it's set up to make a quarterback look a little bit better statistically than he's actually playing. So there's a lot of easy throws, a lot of high-percentage stuff that relies on people taking the ball and gaining yards after the catch with it, which aren't necessarily, they're not bad plays by Eli Manning, but they're padding his stats a little bit. And there's just a lot of poor decisions in there with Eli Manning, which has always been a trait of his game. He makes a lot of bad decisions, a lot of bad throws, puts the ball in harm's way. But when he was at his best in 2011, 2012, there were so many really big plays to offset those. And I think the number of those has just diminished over the past couple of seasons. And we're seeing him kind of play a lot more average football at this point.
You think that's a product of that offensive line a little bit, you know, having to be able to rush his passes and not being real confident staying in the pocket?
It certainly doesn't help. You know, anytime you've got an offensive line that's just surrendering a huge amount of pressure, it's a real problem for quarterbacks. I think overall, quarterback passer rating drops about 35 points when you put pressure on a guy from a clean pocket.
Wow.
So the NFL average is something in the 90s, 94.4 last year, drops to 61.8 when you're able to apply any kind of pressure on him. So that's why, you know, you hear people talk about sacks being everything as pass rushers, but hurries are important too, because just hurrying a guy, when you look at the big picture, takes his passer rating down by about 30, 35 points. So anytime you've got a bad offensive line that's surrendering a huge amount of pressure, it's making the quarterback's job a lot more difficult. But we've seen Eli Manning overcome bad offensive lines in the past. Like I said, 2011, that offensive line was not good, and Eli Manning played phenomenally in the face of pressure all season long. So I don't think it's the excuse, but it's definitely not helping him.
Sure.
We're joined by Sam Monson, Pro Football Focus, and in a little bit I'll ask for you to call in, and you'll have a chance to win a PFF Edge subscription as well. Sam, I want to go to the defense. Is there any reason to think that this defense, the second year in the system with all these great players they added last offseason, is not going to be a dominant defense once again?
No, I think it should be. I mean, the only query would be the number of guys last season that had kind of career years out of nowhere. But I don't, just from what we've seen of them preseason, I don't think it's going anywhere. You know, Landon Collins has looked every bit a defensive player of the year candidate in limited snaps in preseason so far, which would be picking up exactly where he left off last year. The pass rushing force of those guys up front, Damon Harrison, I think you could bet money on being the best run defender in the NFL again this season. So there are so many pieces that are coming together for that defense. It does look like it's going to be one of the best units in the game.
Well, we got a young, he's not a rookie, he's a second-year player, which will be starting at that middle linebacker position, and B.J. Goodson out of Clemson. What do you know about B.J.? And, you know, that's a big shoes to fill, stepping in there as a first-year player, if you will, at a starting position. You know, calling out the plays, doing that. Anything you want to add about B.J. Goodson?
It is, and it's always been the issue with this Giants team for years now is the bit in the middle. It's the linebacker position they've been struggling to fit for several years. And Goodson's another guy that, you know, hasn't played a huge amount in preseason, but didn't really do anything plus or minus to differentiate himself so far in this preseason, but was a guy that does have huge talent. There's a different, slightly smaller guy to what the Giants have traditionally gone for with those big hulking inside linebackers. Goodson, I think, has a bit more range and a bit more athleticism to him to finally, I think, resolve that position inside or in the middle of that defense in terms of the linebacker depth for the first time in a long while.
Sam, what can you tell us about Ross Cockrell, the defensive back corner that the Giants traded for from the Pittsburgh Steelers?
I really like Cockrell. I think he's a talented player. I think that has the potential to be a real steal, particularly in this defense. You know, the Steelers play a lot of zone coverage, which I don't think necessarily plays well to his strengths. I think Cockrell is a longer, rangy type of corner that really excels in man coverage. When you allow him to get up at the line of scrimmage, get in a receiver's face and get hands on him, I think that's when he's at his best. So I'm really intrigued to see how Cockrell's going to do in this defense. I think he could prove to be a really underrated move.
Is he someone that can play the slot, or is he mostly an outside corner?
I think he's mostly an outside corner. William Gay was the guy that typically manned the slot inside for Pittsburgh. But, yeah, Cockrell's a kind of bigger, six-foot corner that can play the outside. He's long and rangy, and has had some really good coverage numbers over the past couple of seasons. It's just the interceptions aren't there. You know, the big flashy plays that everybody likes to see from their cornerbacks haven't been there. But he's broken up a lot of passes. The past couple of seasons, he's been right up there around 10 pass breakups each year. Hasn't allowed an awful lot. Last year, didn't allow anything longer than 37 yards. So, yeah, I think that's going to be a steal.
Well, the Giants coming out of preseason, we're still looking for that, you know, fourth corner, if you will. You get a guy from Pittsburgh that comes over that started for the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, you look at the addition of Joe Haden up there, and, you know, you kind of sometimes wonder, you know, how things work. And I think the Giants got a good one. I think, you know, you can't go wrong with a guy that plays well. He's a veteran, and you can come in and learn the system under Spags. And certainly you got a, you know, an experienced fourth corner, which the Giants definitely need. So I think a lot of people don't know much about him, but I think we're going to find out a lot about him in the next, month or so when people get to know him.
Yeah, and I think he's a better fit for the Giants' defensive scheme than he was for the Steelers' one. So I think it explains a little bit why Pittsburgh were willing to let him go for, you know, not an awful lot, along with Joe Haden coming on board. But I think he's worth more to the Giants than he is to Pittsburgh.
Sure.
All right, we're going to open up the lines, folks. If you want to call in, the first five calls will receive a free PFF Edge subscription at 201-939-4513. You're going to have to give my man Dave Dominic, our producer, my code word here to make sure you didn't call in before I announce it on the air. The code word is Ramses for Ramses Barden. So give us a call, get in, and you'll get to ask Sam a question as well. Again, 201-939-4513. The number is open. Sam, I want to go around the NFC East a little bit. Who do you think is the biggest threat to the Giants in the division? Because I think you can make the argument for any of the NFC East teams to be a real competitor to give them a chance to win this division.
I think that's exactly right. We did our preview podcast the past couple of weeks, and when we got to the NFC East, it was really a case of any of these teams could win it. I think all of us expect Dallas to take a little bit of a step back from last year, not just because of whatever materializes from the Zeke Elliott suspension, but just the feeling that they overachieved a little bit last year. And it seems like every single year we all get sucked into suspecting Philadelphia is going to be pretty good. But I think this year, I'm going to do it again. I think this year could be the year they actually, you know, actually produce as opposed to flatter to deceive. I think their roster top to bottom for the past couple of years has been really strong, but they've been bad in two key areas. They've had no receivers, and they've had no cornerbacks. But this year, they've actually gone hard to address a couple of those problems. They signed Alshon Jeffery in free agency. They brought on some weapons. They made the trade for Ronald Darby. So that alone gives them one viable starting number one corner. So I think the Eagles shouldn't be as bad in the areas of weakness that have plagued them over the past couple of seasons as they were. And the rest of that roster is in really good shape.
Well, and then we'll switch over to the Redskins. Of course, they lose all their wide receivers, and, you know, they don't certainly – to me, what do you think about the Redskins and their chances? I think the Redskins are the team that's on the bottom end of this NFC East, in my opinion. What do you think?
I think that's probably true, but then the caveat is if those receivers, they basically changed their entire receiving core. They sent one out the door and they brought in a completely different one. When you look at Terrell Pryor and then Josh Doctson essentially getting on the field for the first time,
right,
if that actually happens. So I agree with you. I think the one caveat would be if those receivers do end up living up to their potential, they're a really talented group. You know, Terrell Pryor gained 1,000 yards last season with a carousel of Browns quarterbacks throwing him the ball, and that was the first time he'd ever played wide receiver in his life. So his talent, I think, is extremely high. His ceiling is huge. And then Josh Doctson, you know, was a first-round pick, has incredible body control and ball skills to adjust the passes, which I think you'll need to do if Kirk Cousins is your quarterback. So I think they are the bottom team looking up, but they do have the ability to leap up that list if those guys all come together as one.
Yeah, you know, I'm with you. I think the Eagles actually have a real good chance here. I think their defense is better. I think Darby's a huge addition. If Wentz can, you know, play more like he did the first three games and less like he did the last 13 last year, or the first four, rather, I think the Eagles can be very good. Want to focus in on Dallas a little bit, Sam, because that's who the Giants' first opponent is. Obviously, we don't know about Ezekiel Elliott, but I think we're all reasonably sure their offense is going to be pretty good with the offensive line and all the talent that they have. But I imagine even for you guys, with everything you look at, that secondary's got to be a very big mystery. We're really not going to know how good they're going to be until we see them on the field for a few games here, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they have the same kind of story as that Washington wide receiver group, and that they just changed so many pieces, it's difficult to know exactly how it's going to come together until we really see it on the field for a few weeks and maybe longer than that. You know, Orlando Scandrick, I think, is the one solid age. He's an aging veteran, but he's been there a long time. Every time he's been on the field, it's been extremely impressive. It's just a case of will injuries and age start to catch up with him. Byron Jones is a fascinating player because he's that one of those true matchup weapons on defense. The way, you know, the league is full of matchup weapons on offense, and everybody's trying to find a guy on defense that can start matching up with these guys. The Giants have one now in Landon Collins, and I think Byron Jones is their version. He's a guy that can, you know, try and cover somebody like Evan Engram inside and
right,
deep down the field, and yet anytime you split him out, he can go out wide and cover as a cornerback as well. So he's the other guy in that defense that I think should be a good, solid, impressive player. The rest are really all question marks, especially with a couple of young guys in there that you're going to need to play and play pretty well quite quickly.
You know, it's funny, Sam. I think we're going to see Byron Jones covering Evan Engram for a very long time in this NFC East. That's going to be a matchup we're going to see a lot over the next 10 years or so.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, those guys are almost tailor-made to go one-on-one against each other.
Yeah.
Real quick, how much has Anthony Hitchens hurt that defense with him not being there at middle linebacker?
It's definitely a loss. I think it's going to be interesting to see what they can get out of Jalen Smith this year, because that gives them an extremely intriguing group of linebackers. You know, with Sean Lee and Jalen Smith, if they can get those guys on the field, it's a phenomenally talented group of two guys. Just the injury question marks surrounding the two are off the charts. So I think it's definitely a loss, but that linebacking group has the ability to be fantastic if they can get the ceiling out of those two guys.
So we've gone through the whole Cowboys and we have yet to mention Dak Prescott. That's pretty impressive. I mean, you know, really, the guy comes. What do you think about Dak coming off his first year? I mean, overachieved in my opinion. I think as the season went along a little bit, they kind of got a little more comfortable and opened up the playbook. What do you expect out of Dak Prescott this season, both from a statistical standpoint and just from a second year player? You never know what can happen to guys in their second year.
You don't, but so far, Dak Prescott has completely confounded all expectations at every single turn. I mean, I was just looking back at the 2016 preseason grades for Dak, and the numbers are phenomenal. The grade is incredible. 2017, it's the same story. He just didn't play as much. You know, he played half the number of snaps this year as he did a year ago, because obviously the Cowboys are set at quarterback now. And really, if you look at his season last year, it was genuinely incredible, but for a couple of key terrible games. I mean, if you take out basically the games where he played the Giants in week 14 and the Eagles in week 8, Prescott's season was incredible. But those two games where he played badly, he played terribly. You know, it wasn't just the case that he came down a little bit and we saw him a little more down to earth. I mean, those were two terrible, spectacularly ugly grades in our system. But it really accounts for almost all of his negative in the season. Everything else is good and positive. And it featured a lot of, you know, driving the ball down the field. It wasn't just dink and dunk stuff that a lot of people want to label him as, you know, target him as because Zeke Elliott was there. They gave him a lot to do. He was asked to push the ball down the field, make some tough throws, and most of the time it came true.
You know, Sam, I just curious, was there anything in common with the way the Eagles and the Giants played him in those two games? Could you find the common thread that links it, or did he just have a couple of bad days against two pretty good defenses?
I think part of the issue was those two teams were able to get a huge amount of pressure on him. The Eagles in particular, Brandon Graham just had his way with Doug Free all day long, and that was a real issue in that game. The Giants didn't get as much pressure, but definitely brought some heat against them. But the Giants game, I think, was the less explainable of the two. It was just a truly horrendous performance by Dak. At least the Eagles won. He was under, you know, a huge amount of pressure all the way through that game, and you can kind of understand it. The Giants one was more of a bad day at the office teamed with some stuff going wrong.
All right, we have our five winners. William in New York, Alex in Manhattan, Vinny in Long Island, Alan in Long Beach, and Julian in Florida. We got a couple of those folks that want to ask you a question, Sam. Let's go to Alex in Manhattan first, and he joins us right now on Big Blue Kickoff. Alex, you're on with Sam from Pro Football Focus. How are you?
Hey, I'm wonderful, fellas. Thank you so much for putting in some work on Labor Day to all three of you. Much
appreciated. No problem.
great having you on, Sam. And I just wanted to ask one deeper question about this Dallas offensive line. I think we always kind of just say, oh, Dallas offensive line is great, and sort of move on. Well, they've had a few changes, and it might be addition by subtraction with Doug Free going, but I'm curious where you find their weak link might be. It might be with some of the new guys coming in, or it might not, but where's the weak link as far as if you're Spagnuolo and you want to kind of set up a game plan to attack these guys? What can we kind of look a little more deeper into these guys and just sort of see where does somebody fight? Is it a combination of two players and they work together might present problems in pass defense? Pass protection. Can you just kind of comment on that? And that'll be my question.
Thank you, Alex. Sam, you with us? Dave, did we lose Sam? We got Sam back? All right, Sam, yep. We got you back here. I can paraphrase the question for Alex. You can answer it. He basically said, as good as the Cowboy offensive line is there a way specifically a defense can attack them, whether a weak link with their changes, the Collins now a right tackle, and it looks like, I guess, Jonathan Cooper is going to be their left guard. Is there a way to attack that group to get the type of pressure that you saw the Eagles get in the Cowboys last year?
Yeah, well, the left guard is the obvious weak point. Jonathan Cooper really has not been anything like a first-round pick all the way through his NFL career, but he has actually played pretty well this preseason. And Lyle Collins looks like he might be a better right tackle than he ever was a guard. So far, or all the way through preseason, I think he allowed just one total hurry all the way through the season. So if you're trying to target them, it's got to be through that left guard. It's got to be trying to win that one-on-one matchup and really just trying to scheme pressure with blitzers from strange places and at least stressing the protections. You know, I don't think you're going to win one-on-one matchups too much, even with the front the Giants have, going up against a trio of all pros in Tyron Smith, Travis Frederick, and Zach Martin. But if you can force them to think about where the pressure's coming from and try and adjust their protections on the fly, I think that's where you're going to get success.
All right, let's go to Julian in Florida. He's our second caller and our second winner that had a question for Sam. Did we lose Sam again? Dave, well, Julian, do me a favor. Give me the question for Sam, and I will relay that for him.
All right, no problem.
Yep.
How are you doing, guys? How's everything going? Happy Labor
Good.
Day.
Everything's sure. Great.
My question really was about, the Dallas Cowboys secondary. How he feels the secondary will be projected to be this year, and do you think most offenses will do good against Dallas secondary? You know, according to how they got rid of most of them, and you know they haven't kept anyone really there.
Got it. Will do. Thank you, Julian. Appreciate it. And Sam is back with us. Sam, just give us a take. He wanted to ask about the Cowboys secondary. I guess it kind of mimics what I asked before. And if there is a weak link for this Cowboys team, is it their secondary?
Yeah, definitely. I think generally the defense is going to be the weaker side of that team, and the secondary is the weakest looking part of the defense. So much relies on young youth and unproven talent in that secondary, because the guys that they do have there that have played an extended period of time, you know, someone like Nolan Carroll, who was part of that problem in Philadelphia last year in terms of having no cornerbacks, is now there in Dallas. So they really need those young guys to step up and play, because the old proven veterans that they have there have proven in the past that they're not really capable of doing that. And anytime you have young guys that are relied upon to get serious playing time early, there's going to be some big plays there to exploit, because those are the guys that will have mental breakdowns, that will have lapses, and big plays are going to come.
Sam, last one from me. We talked about their secondary just to preview the game on Sunday. We know Dallas has a bunch of suspensions on the defensive line, trying to put pressure of their own on Eli Manning. How do you see them handling that with the guys they're missing on the defensive line? And do you think they're going to be able to create any sort of pressure given the guys that they're going to be missing? And specifically David Irving, who I think is probably a pretty unique player for you guys, who looks great one week and then really doesn't look too great another.
Yeah, I think that's true. But he is a big loss for them in terms of being the single biggest producer of pressure on that defensive line. They are a team that's, I think, going to have to do what we just talked about the Giants doing in terms of scheming some pressure, because even against a Giants offensive line that's had its problems, it doesn't look like it's going to have an overwhelming advantage when it comes to one-on-one matchups. So they're going to have to send some linebacker pressure. They're going to have to try and bring guys from the secondary sometimes in terms of safety blitzes and that kind of thing, and just generally overload one side of the offense and try and bring heat in creative ways and get pressure that way. I think there's too much missing from this Dallas front to really be dominant or have a big advantage on paper.
I'm just going to switch out of just the NFC East stuff and just your opinion, the AFC. Which teams are you looking for to be good? And obviously we know New England, but who can sneak up on in the AFC this year in your opinion?
Yeah, more than any other year, it looks like this is the Patriots and then everybody else. And particularly when you look at what's going on in that division with the Jets in the state they're in and the Bills looking to completely blow that thing up and start again, and Miami losing Ryan Tannehill. So, you know, the Patriots are as good as ever, if not better, and their division looks worse than it's been for a long time. So the Patriots should be the clear team out of that division, at least, and one of the favorites for taking the AFC. There's a few other teams I think they're going to make it interesting. A lot of people are big fans of the Chargers. If they can just stay healthy enough, their offensive line is a concern, but there's a huge amount of talent on that roster on defense. Mike Williams looks like he's actually going to get to play this season, where it was a concern that he might not, their top-round rookie. So the Chargers, I think, have the ability to surprise some people. Pittsburgh, I think, are another team that will be very good in there. But I think there's the AFC outside of New England, outside of the Patriots, is pretty wide open, because that AFC West as well could be won by any one of, I think, three teams easily.
Do you have a sleeper team in the NFC team, NFC, Sam, that nobody's talking about?
Well, the NFC, I think, is just much more wide open. I think there's so many teams that could take that NFC that it's really, you could go in a number of different places. I think pretty much any team could come out of the NFC South. I think the Falcons will take a step backwards with losing Kyle Shanahan to be the head coach of the San Francisco 49ers. I think that will lead to this regression across the offense. Matt Ryan won't have the same kind of year. Julio Jones probably won't be as dominant. We'll just see that team, I think, take a step back generally. But Carolina have added so many intriguing weapons in the offseason. Tampa Bay maybe had the best offseason of any team in the league when you put together their draft and their free agency. And then I think New Orleans had the best draft of anybody in the league. So I think that entire division could end up being good. And then it's just a case of which team emerges from it.
And I want to remind people, if you weren't one of our five winners today, you can still save. Go to PFF.com, and if you put PFF10 into your promo code box, you can save $10 or 25% off your subscription. Sam, anything else you want to tell the folks about Pro Football Focus, what their options are, and what you guys do for them?
Yeah, I mean, we've consolidated all of our stuff this year, so we're offering two products now. PFF Edge, which is the one you guys have been giving away today, and that's where you get player grades, you get snap counts, position ranks, you get all of our fantasy projections, rankings, that kind of stuff. You get draft coverage, you get all our stuff. We're putting out We have 2018 content out already in terms of draft guides. We're going to have more of those as the season progresses. And it's really it's our entry product. It's where you come to get most of the things. PFF Elite is our top-end thing. That's where you get all of the super DFS tools that we get that are powered by the PFF data. It's where you get added to an elite Facebook group where you get bonuses throughout the season where we think of cool things that we can drop guys. That's where that's where all the cool kids live.
I think that John and I need to be there. We need to live where the cool kids live. Yeah.
All right, guys. There you go. There's the info, Sam. Great stuff as always. We'll talk to you as we go through the season, and it's finally here. We've been waiting for real football games for a long time, and we're finally going to get our first taste on Thursday night. Enjoy it. Have fun, and we'll talk to you down the road. Thanks for everything,
buddy. Thank
you,
Sam.
You too. Take it easy, guys.
Okay.
And thank you to Pro Football Focus for powering that giveaway today.
Man, he's got a mind. He knows a lot of stuff.
Oh, and I think I'm on.
And that site is pretty amazing. You know, whatever one you decide to go to, it's pretty informative. We use it all the time here on Big Blue Kickoff.
Everybody, thanks so much. Feegs, any final thoughts? This is your last show before the first regular season game against Dallas.
No.
I want to make sure I get your final thoughts here before we say goodbye.
Well, my final thoughts on the upcoming game are what do you need? So
give me anything you want.
Listen,
season, before the season starts, the first game, whatever you got.
My final thought on training camp and the 53-man roster, I think that going into the season, we kind of had an idea because the veteran, this was an established team. Couple of surprises, but all in all, I think this team is locked and loaded and ready to go. We all know it all determines how healthy a team stays. The Dallas game, I think it's a great opportunity to win. I think that if Elliott is out of the game, that's only a bonus. Even if he's in the game, I still think the Giants have a good chance of going up there and winning because of the Dallas defense. There you go, John.
And how about the season in general?
I think the season in general.
If you want to give me a record, you can. If you don't, you don't have to.
I'm gonna say that the Giants win 10 games. It's going to be 10 or 11. I think that the NFC East champion will be a 10-game winner.
And it will be the Giants?
Because of what we just talked about.
And I think it will be the Giants at 10-6.
I do think it will be the Giants, and I also do believe that this NFC East is going to go down to the wire the last couple weeks of the season.
I think we are on similar pages.
Yes, we are. Good minds think
alike. I agree with that. Feeks, thanks a lot, my friend.
Okay, good luck.
And, of course, stay tuned to Big Blue Kickoff all week long as we get ready for Giants and Cowboys Sunday Night Football, the start of the 2017 season. For Jeff Feagles, I'm John Schmuck. Thanks so much. We'll see you next time on Giants.com, everybody.
Have a
great day.
One.